Leute, am Donnerstag starten die CrossFit Open 2022.
Und wir haben heute den perfekten Gast im Podcast, um euch genau zu erklären, wie der Hase läuft. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit der Folge.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Training ohne Limit. Mein Name ist Silvan Schlegel und ich sitze hier zusammen mit dem wunderbaren Hendrik Senf.
Herzlich willkommen auch von meiner Seite. Ich könnte mich nicht mehr darüber freuen heute, Silvan, dass wir gemeinsam einen Podcast machen und wieder mit einem Gast. Aber welchem heute? Also das ist wirklich unglaublich. Ich glaube, das wird auch eine richtig tolle Überraschung, aber wahrscheinlich habt ihr es schon im Namen gelesen, wen wir da zu Gast haben. Silvan, stellst du uns unseren Gast einmal vor?
Ja, ich glaube, dass wir unseren Gast heute gar nicht groß vorstellen müssen. Viele von euch werden ihn kennen. Wir sprechen heute nämlich mit dem fünffachen CrossFit Games Gewinner Matt Fraser. Und wir hatten im Rahmen seiner Buchvorstellung die Möglichkeit, mit ihm über seine sportliche Karriere, sein Programming sowie die ganze Story um Hard Work Pays Off zu sprechen. An dieser Stelle auch nochmal ein herzliches Dankeschön an die Kollegen und Kolleginnen der Münchner Verlagsgruppe, die den Kontakt hergestellt haben und uns dieses Gespräch erst ermöglicht haben.
Sollte jemand noch gar nicht in Kontakt mit Matt gekommen sein und nichts über den wissen, dann für euch, Matt Fraser hat nicht nur die CrossFit Games 5-mal gewonnen, er war insgesamt sogar 7-mal auf dem Podium, also ist auch noch 2-mal Zweiter geworden. Und dafür hat er eine lange Weightlifting, also Gewichtheberkarriere vor sich, die er beenden musste, da er sich die Lendenwirbelsäule gebrochen hatte, beziehungsweise einen Lendenwirbelkörper. Und seine Rückkehr jetzt in den Sport und wie das Ganze sich zu Hard Work Pays Off entwickelt hat, das besprechen wir jetzt gemeinsam mit ihm. Natürlich alles auf Englisch, also falls ihr da nicht alles verstehen solltet, ganz am Ende vom Podcast werden wir uns nochmal Mühe geben, dann alles ein bisschen zusammenzufassen. Aber ich kann euch jetzt schon mal sagen, das wird richtig gut. Da sind einige Sachen dabei, die in keinem Podcast mit ihm bisher besprochen wurden oder zumindest nicht ganz klar so rausgestellt wurden. Also wünschen wir euch jetzt ganz, ganz viel Spaß mit dem Gespräch und ich sag mal herzlich willkommen, Matt Fraser. Alright, first of all, we are incredibly grateful to have you on the show today, Matt. And in 5 days is when the CrossFit Games Open start,
yeah,
which also marks the point of you being out of competition for 1.5 years. So how's your life been?
I mean, great. You know, I kind of fell into the trap of, you know, saying like when I decided that I was done competing, you know, it's easy to say like, oh, you know, I'm retired, but it's not the case at all. I retired from competing. I'm busier now than I've ever been. So, you know, trying to keep up with all the projects is a challenge in itself. But no, I mean, it's been fantastic. I mean, still heavily involved in the space. It's just I'm not the one trying to push my limits on the competition floor. You know, I'm trying to find the limits outside and then helping some younger athletes coming up. So it's been a lot of fun.
So it's been a lot of fun after you ended your career. Has it been a lot of fun during your career as well? Or was it just a ton of work?
Yeah, there were moments, like I obviously did it because I loved it. It was a great opportunity, you know, and not many people get to say that they get to work out for a living. So that was fantastic. But at the same time, you know, it's from eyes open to eyes closed. And then I'm even taking in factors to make sure that I'm sleeping better so I can contribute to my career better there. And you know, it's a long season, it's a grind. I'm dedicating anything and everything I can towards it. So I knew the day that I said I was done, it was for real. I was done. You know, I very rarely backtrack on decisions like that. Like I make sure it's the right decision. It's not just like a spur of the moment
thing. And when did you make that decision? Was it always that you wanted to win it 5 times and then just get out of it, or how did that come around?
So I actually, my original plan was to stop after 4. And I remember having a call with my buddy, you know, maybe a week or two after the 2019 games. And I said, I was like, hey man, like I think I'm done, you know, I'm good. And you know, because I had looked at it of like, all right, I have four gold medals and then also two silvers, and nobody else has six podium finishes. And and so, you know, I was ready to walk away right then. And then it was my buddy that kind of was like, hey, I think you'll regret this decision down the road. So he was the one that talked me into going for a fifth gold. And so obviously I'm glad, but yeah, it was after 2019 that I originally was like, all right, I'm retired. And then, so through the whole 2020 season leading into my fifth and last gold medal season, I already knew that it was my last one.
I would imagine that must have been super stressful to win the fourth title, thinking about retirement, and then having to get back on track to make it for another year.
Well, I mean, not only was I already in the mental state of like, all right, I'm going to start living the good life, I'm going to focus on other projects, I'm going to start dedicating my time elsewhere. But then going through that last season, it was first time anyone's dealt with running an event with COVID going on. And like,
yeah,
our games, you know, they originally like, they're like, we can't host an in-person competition. And so like, it's like, all right, we're going virtual. And then the in-person competition kept getting pushed back and back and back. So not only was I already going a year longer than I anticipated, but then that 1 year mark hits and then they're like, it's delayed 4 weeks. It's delayed 4 weeks. It's delayed four. And so then I'm going, all right, not only is this season unexpected, but now it's longer than anticipated. And like, what if we finally get to, you know, September, October, and they go, ah, we can't do it. Like, we can't pull it off, you know, and they cancel the whole thing. Then it's like, well, shit, do I go another one so I can take a whack at the fifth, or do I just walk away on that like bummer of a season? So yeah, like finishing up the 2020 season with an actual in-person competition, CrossFit did a phenomenal job, and I'm so grateful that they put in that extra time and effort to make it all work. Like, they had to really stretch our resources to make that whole competition happen. And nobody would have batted an eye if they just canceled the whole thing. Like, every other sport's canceling.
Yeah, like the Olympics, like, they didn't happen, right?
Yeah, like they would have been completely justified in their decision to just cancel the whole thing. But I, you know, so I'm thankful that they pushed through.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, it was not only your last competition, but it was also your most dominant one. So if you look at the scoreboard, you completely destroyed the field on that run.
Yeah, I mean, every year there's different, you know, there's different qualifying procedures, there's different scoring. Like, I've just in my career, I've experienced a couple different scoring systems. So, you know, like that last in-person piece, you know, there were some different factors. Like, there was a different scoring system. There's only five of us in person, but I mean, it definitely did feel good to go out knowing that I'm still getting better. You know, like, my big fear was like overstaying my welcome. And I mean, you see it sometimes with athletes that are trying to string together one last good career, or like they're like limping off the field, like metaphorically. And I never wanted that for myself. You know, when I'm done competing in the sport, I still wanted to love the sport. I still wanted to be a part of the community. I still wanted to have good memories of it all. And so that was a big contributing factor of why I stopped while I was still winning and still getting better. Was I wanted to walk away from it with a good feeling about it. But yeah, like that last competition, it went well. I was really happy that I got to go out on a high.
Yeah, and that seemed like a really good transition. Now, with everything you've lined up, you just came out with your new book, Hard Work Pays Off, which we're going to talk about in this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. But we want to start with your career, obviously, first, so that everybody's on the same page on where you actually come from.
Yeah.
One thing we want to know for sure is, in your opinion, what was the determining factor why you were so much better than the competition, especially over time?
I don't know if you can pinpoint it to one thing. You know, like, there are so many variables going on through the whole season that, you know, to pinpoint it on one thing and one thing alone, saying like this was the deciding factor, I don't think that would be realistic or fair. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I did in my training, in my life, that I think contributed. But if you took any one of those things on its own, may not have any effect. But then you start piling up 20, 30, 50 of them. And that's when it starts moving the needle.
Mm.
So, I mean, I think there's definitely some obvious ones that were kind of the bigger contributing factors. The one that I think is the most important is losing in 2015. You know, I had a really, really disappointing results. It was, so anyone that's new to hearing about me, 2014 was my rookie season and I got second place and I was, you know, doing backflips over. I couldn't have been happier with the results.
Mm-hmm.
2015, I got second place again and could not have been more upset. It was a devastating loss. And it really, lack of a better term, like fucked me up for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to expectations, right? The expectations Yep. you set on that season, but also the pressure from the outside, because everybody was thinking Matt Fraser's going to take it after like being so successful in his rookie year. And you were supposed to win that thing.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't supposed to do anything, but like that was my expectations too. And after enough time thinking on it and like analyzing not only the results, but then my emotions related to the results was the most devastating part of that was that didn't reflect my ability.
Mm.
And, you know, so that silver medal just represented all the cut corners, you know, me slacking off, not taking it seriously, resting on my laurels. And so I think that in itself was probably the biggest sole contributor to what then followed, because after that, I was like, oh, I can't leave anything up to what if. Like, what if my sleep schedule was better? What if my diet was better? What if my training was more consistent? What if I was in healthier relationships? All these things. And that was the thing that kept me up at night after the 2015 season, was wondering, what was the contributing thing? What was the last decision I made that was the final fork in the road of like, you're able to win it, you're going to lose it.
Mm.
What was that one thing? Because the 2015 season literally came down to the last event. And it didn't matter if people middled Ben and I, it didn't matter any of that stuff. It mattered just who, between he and I, who won that final event. That's it. And so, I mean, you can break it down to the tiniest little thing that contributed to, you know, him winning, me losing.
Yeah.
So I look at anything basically. Yeah, like a good night's sleep the night before type thing. Never mind the whole previous season. So in a couple ways, like when I first got that silver medal, and then for like a year or two afterwards, I hated it. I hated looking at it, didn't want to see it, didn't want to think about it. But then looking back now, I'm like, thank God I got silver that year. Because if I had gotten gold that year, I would have been rewarded for my poor actions.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been rewarded. I would have thought, oh, I can win and still have this bad sleep schedule. I can win and still have this terrible diet. I can win and have inconsistent training. And so then I would have probably most likely had a mediocre career the rest of my time in. But because of that second silver, I was like, I never want that to happen again. I'm going to do anything in my power to make sure I don't have that. And so, you know, I based my life around trying to get better in every single thing, and like stuff that I trained, practiced, that never came up, never got tested. But like, that's what preparation is. Like, you don't know if it's going to come in, but you know, just being prepared for anything and everything. And so the few times that, you know, these unique things did come up and I was ready for them, that's where it paid off. I would say that was the biggest contributing factor. But then also, like, I set my life up to have this singular sole focus. Like, you know, I I'm lucky enough that my fiance, my life partner, was in the trenches with me. I was lucky to have a manager that was in the trenches with me, so I can focus on training. She took everything off my plate, like did anything and everything around the house. I literally showed up at home, ate, sleep, leave. You know, she did a ton of my body work throughout all the seasons. You know, she sacrificed so much of to make sure that she was there to support me when I needed her. My manager, he took everything business related off of. I literally woke up with one fucking goal, and that was just train, like train to be a champion, and that's it. So, you know, having that, that was definitely a huge, huge benefit in my performance, that I wake up and I don't think about anything other than training and competing.
I remember the story of you back in the days when there were lots of documentaries of the CrossFit Games. I remember you eating all that ice cream, like the Ben and Jerry's ice cream, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I went once to Vermont, and they have the Ben and Jerry's, the original factory there, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. Ben and Jerry's is a Vermont company.
Exactly. So I remember you being the guy that always ate ice cream, but still came second at the games, which was awesome. But obviously you took that out then after, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you know, and I, like, through the 14th season and the 15th season, you know, I kind of, looking back now, I can see my intentions with doing that. One, it's a delicious treat. Who doesn't love ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
But then two, it was almost like a defense mechanism of, I took pride in the fact that, like, I would meet up with training partners or my training partner for the day and just kick the shit out of them all day. And then when we go back home and they're eating rice, broccoli, chicken breast, and they're weighing it all out, and I'm sitting there eating a pint of Ben and Jerry's, you know, it was almost like a defense mechanism, like, oh, you know, like I'm beating you, and I'm barely putting any effort in. And then if the results came up of, like, you know, I didn't measure up, or I came up short, you know, I lose an event, it was almost like a defense mechanism of, like, me being like, oh, well, you know, I don't take it that seriously. I still eat ice cream every night. I'm still staying up late and doing this and that. But after the 15th season, you know, that was one of the questions of, like, what if I didn't eat a pint of Ben and Jerry's every single night? Like, would my body composition be a little bit better, and my gymnastics would be a little bit easier, and then my performance would have, like, would that be the thing that tipped the needle over to the win side? So it was kind of funny too. I remember watching the 2015 documentary, and I was watching it with Sammy, and we're in the movie theater watching it, and I came on screen, and my eyes went like grapefruits. I was like, holy shit. I was like, Sammy, I was so big. Like, why did no one tell me I was that big? And she was like, we all thought you knew. I was like, no, I didn't realize I had this like trunk on me. And I was like, yeah, no shit. Some of the gymnastics movements were a little difficult. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, that was one of those contributing factors. Like, what if my diet was better? And mainly, like, I took pride in the fact that I ate a pint of Ben and Jerry's every single night before bed. That got cut out.
And pretty much that marked the start then of the whole hard work pays off thing, I guess. The whole 2016 season, when you, like, worked your ass off and then finally got your first CrossFit Games win, right?
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask if that first win, with that relief of, like, everything, all the expectations, like, all this dropping, was it the best, like, the best feeling CrossFit Games win of all of the five?
No. So, I mean, this is going to be kind of a disappointing answer. The emotions that came after winning the games in 2016 were really, really disappointing. Because I was expecting, it was this thing, this goal that I had been chasing for years. And then when I finally got it, I thought it would be like a video game where, like, you leveled up, you have this new superpower, you have this thing, you have this accomplishment that you've been chasing for years. I thought I would feel different. But I remember winning and just being like, oh, I'm, I feel the exact same, like nothing changed. And it was disappointing only in the fact that I was expecting something to change on the inside, some way that I would feel to be leveled up. And it wasn't. Like there was a sigh of relief, like the week after the games, I finally got to relax. You know, I was my first time taking a full week off from training, sitting on my dock, not doing anything. It was a relief that I was like, okay, I'm not finishing my CrossFit career empty-handed. But it messed me up in a little bit of like, huh, I thought I would be more giddy or more excited about winning. And not to say that I wasn't happy about it because I achieved a goal, but I thought it would just be more bigger. And it kind of messed with me a little bit because I was like, huh, why don't I feel anything from that? But then, you know, after enough time with a pen and paper and kind of jotting down my thoughts, I realized like, oh, it's not the destination that you're excited about. It's the journey. It's the process. It's that daily grind. Like those are the memories. Like there's from the CrossFit competition, from the games, there's a handful of memories that I vividly remember. Like it's like a video playing over my head. But from training, from the years I've spent in the gym with friends, family, traveling, like that's where the memories are made. That's the stuff that if you learn to love the journey, the process, the daily actions going into it, you've already won. And so once I realized that too, of like, oh, the memories are made in training and in the progress leading up to the competition. The competition, yeah, it's great. It's fun. You know, that's where you kind of get graded. That's where you get to see how all the stuff you've done behind closed doors, how that's performing up against everyone else. But yeah, it was pretty eye-opening realizing that like, oh, it's not about the end goal. It's about the process the whole way there.
And that realization must have had a huge impact on you because you came back 4 more times to take that thing home.
Yeah.
Right. So it certainly cannot be only about winning the competition itself.
No, I mean, I got to work out for a living.
Like, yeah, absolutely. And that's incredible.
It's the sweetest job. You get to hang out. Like, you know, I got to spend so much time with Sammy and fun training partners. I got to experience like basically, you know, anytime there was something that like, as soon as I decided that I'm like, all right, I want to get better at X, I can call up like one of the best people at that in the world. And they're willing to teach me. So, you know, I've gotten to build some relationships over the years and I've had some life experiences that are second to none. So, I mean, just training day to day was just, you're solving a puzzle. You know, you have this problem in front of you and you can't solve it in one day. You have to break it up into, you know, 300 days, 300 steps to that final goal. So that was really, really gratifying too, because that was another thing I realized early on was I need to set up like daily goals along the way, because if my only goal through the entire year is to win the world championships, win the CrossFit games, every day leaving the gym, if I look at it objectively of like, did I achieve my goal today? No, today's a failure.
True.
Every single day I'm leaving the gym and it's like, did I achieve my goal? Nope. All right. Waste of a fucking day. You know, like there's no gratification on the daily basis. So setting up those goals that I can achieve every single day, I can check the box and have that dose of gratitude, that dose, you know, of accomplishment, that was a big, big contributing factor.
Speaking about goals, when you came on the CrossFit, like on the CrossFit radar, pretty much, when you went into your first regionals, was it always on your mind to win that thing?
Dude.
Or was it just you came there and competed?
Dude, my first regionals was an interesting weekend. So my first regionals was 2013. And they took the top 3 from each region to the games, and I came 5th. And I'm pretty sure I was like 2 points out from qualifying. I was 1 point behind 4th place, and he was one point behind 3rd place. And I am so, so thankful that I did not qualify that year because I was so unprepared. I had been doing CrossFit at that point, I think, for 6 months or 9 months.
Wow.
And so incredible, like, that you didn't know what I was doing. Literally, like, to the point that one of the workouts was like, it was 100 of each movement, and one of the movements was chest to bar. And I didn't own gymnastics grips. So I'm doing my chest to bar in like mechanics gloves. And I was doing sets of three. And the guy who was helping me, he owned the gym that I went to, Jay Jenny, was standing in the crowd and counting down for me how long I was allowed to rest. And then he'd be 3, 2, 1, go. And then I would do three. And then he would count down for me. Like, that's how.
Was your engine good enough to make up for that?
No, my engine was so god awful. Like, my first year regionals, I think we had an overhead squat. It was like 7 minutes to get a 3 rep max overhead squat. And then it was like a 1 minute break or 2 minute break, and then 30 burpee ring muscle ups.
Yeah.
I literally went from, I got the world record in the overhead squat. I overhead squatted 315 for a double or a triple or something. And then in the next event, I like barely squeaked in under the time cap. I was thrashed. I think it was a 7 minute time cap for 30 burpee ring muscle ups.
And you barely made it. Okay.
I'm like, don't quote me on my numbers, but I'm pretty sure I was like high 6 minutes.
Mm.
Like, I had zero engine, zero cardio. I could just lift weights and I moved well.
So you made it so far to the front because it was a 100 point system, I guess. And despite your hiccups on things like chest to bar, the weightlifting still pushed you ahead of everybody else, or mostly everybody, correct?
Yeah, it was the reverse scoring system of what it is now. So it was, if you got first place on an event, you got 1 point. If you got fifth place, you got 5 points. And so there was a couple events that, like, I was able to just be a weightlifter and it wasn't very cardio dominant. So I was able to like pull out some decent results. And that was basically what carried me. But I mean, I didn't know what I was doing at that competition. I didn't know how to warm up, you know, like,
crazy.
At that competition, I thought I had this like great idea of like, my warm up was juggling a soccer ball for 5 minutes before going out on the floor. Like, that was what I did. I was very, very inexperienced. But once again, from that competition, I saw the names that beat me, and I was like, I wasn't thrilled about it. I was like, I think if I try a little bit at this, I can beat those guys. And so then, like, the whole next season, I started working on some weaknesses, and I looked at it like a side hustle of like going to these little local competitions that, you know, they have $1,000 prize purse. Well, for a broke college student, like $1,000 goes a long way. And so I was like, I looked at that as like, this is my part-time job. I need to study during the week, like doing my rowing intervals, doing my gymnastics progression, stuff like that, so that when I show up to work, like these weekend competitions, I can perform well. And that's literally how it started, of just like just working on my weaknesses so I could perform better every weekend whenever I found one of these little competitions. And then it just kind of evolved bit by bit. You know, it went from getting fifth at regionals to then showing up to these local comps with not very much competition and winning, and then showing up and like, oh, there was a former regional athlete or former games athlete at a competition and I won it. And now there's a bunch of games athlete at this off season competition and I won it. And then I won regionals and went to the games.
I remember them having the half marathon row at the 2013 CrossFit Games, right?
Yeah.
How would have that been for you back then?
No, I mean, that's the event that jumps out in my mind. That, like, thank God I didn't qualify for the games, because that event would have been announced. I know I would have done it. I would have given my full effort, but like, I would have finished at the bottom of the pack because I was so unprepared. Like, in 2013, we did the workout Jackie. So it started with a 1K row. On that 1K row, I'm as close to positive as I can be that I pulled a 150 for that for that 1,000 meters, and that was pushing the pace. I think when I did it in practice, I think I either pulled a 155 or a 2 minute pace. And the guy that owned the gym, Jade, I think he was trying to be helping. He's like, "Yo, that's, you got to speed it up a little bit, you know, like that."
But Jackie's one on the thrusters and pull-ups, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 1,000 meters row, 50 thrusters, 30 pull-ups.
Yeah. But for example, I'm not the tallest guy either. You're not super tall, right? And then an event that is purely rowing is always like the hardest. But I personally was always extremely impressed throughout your career, and I still wonder how you did it, is that you, in the beginning, you weren't great at rowing, but then a few years later, I remember the marathon row, and you came in one of the top spots. And I wondered, how did Matt Fraser do that? So how did you?
Yeah, I think like the marathon row was definitely like it's an outlier, you know.
Totally.
It's like an extreme, like it's at the extreme end of distance, single modality workout, and so, you know, rowing on its own, I can hold my own, I think, you know. And like with the marathon, I forget if I got sixth place or ninth place, but I'm fairly certain it was a top 10. But like rowing intervals, rowing in a Metcon, that's where I was like, I thrive here. This is where I like, because this is what we're going to see most of the time. Yeah. So the marathon row, that was, dude, that was brutal. But, you know, like I remember early on, kind of like the, you know, I was terrible at rowing. And so the company Concept 2, they're also Vermont based. And so a bunch of their employees went to my home gym, and one of them, you know, I did a competition. The rower was like my weakest event. So I wanted to get better at rowing. So I'm just doing rowing from what I know. And I've never had anyone show me how to row or technique or anything. And Greg, I remember specifically, he walked in and he saw me rowing and he just stopped me. He was like, stop. Like, I was in the middle of an interval. He's like, you're doing it so wrong. And so he showed me the proper technique. And then, you know, it was something that I knew was my biggest weakness. So I was like, all right, I'll contribute a bunch of time to get better at this. And it was kind of two birds with one stone. Not only was I getting better at the rowing technique itself, but I was getting better conditioning, some conditioning work in as well. And then you start hearing the comments of like, man, you're a good rower for a short guy. And that just pissed me off. I'm like, I don't want to be good for a short guy. I want to be good. And so it was just something that, there's probably a couple factors, but like one, lack of a better term, the instant gratification of putting in some time on the rower and then immediately seeing the results. Like when you get a pat on the back like that, of like, oh, I just PR'd, you're more likely to spend a little bit more time, put a little bit more effort into that same thing, because you have a good feeling association with that movement.
Yeah, but you can't PR every training session, right?
I mean, when you suck enough in the beginning, sure you can.
Okay, maybe then, you can. I get it.
But then the rower then also became my go-to for working on conditioning, because I had spent so much time on it. I was so comfortable on it. I was so familiar with it that I was able to push the pace further and further. I was able to have a higher and higher pain tolerance on it because I was so comfortable on it. I was so familiar with it that I was able to keep myself calm even when my heart rate is like through the roof. Whereas if you're doing it with a new movement and your heart rate's spiking up like that, you're gasping for air so dramatically, it's panicking because your body is in a situation that is unfamiliar with. The red light, the warning light is flashing. And so it's like a safety precaution of like, oh, okay, I need to slow it down. I need to pull this back to keep myself safe. But I had spent so much time on the rower, I was so familiar with it that even when I was in that really, really painful spot, I was able to soothe myself and tell myself, it's okay. Keep going. You can push harder. You were here last week. You felt the same sensation last week. Let's see if we can take one step further. And so it became the go-to machine for me to really try to push the pace. And I was okay failing on it. Like it's a great risk reward machine, because if you fail, nothing happens. You just miss your pace and that's it. It's not like a barbell where the barbell can crash on you. It's not like rings where you're falling from 8 feet up in the air. This one, if you go to failure, you're sitting down already. Like there's nothing that can really go wrong.
Which makes it even harder on the mental aspect, I think, because on the rower, you can push yourself to the absolute limit.
Yeah.
So if you look at something like a muscle up where you have to take a little bit of rest in between or heavy weightlifting, on the rower, you can just continuously push it and go to the absolute maximum.
Yeah.
So let's break down the strategy that you have on the rower. I think you have a specific chapter on that in the book as well, where you describe how to go forward with that. Mm-hmm. But how do you do it? How do you spend time on that machine? Because a lot of people think that you just hammer it all out every single day, and I just have a hard time believing that.
Early on, I definitely did. It was a learning process. I didn't step into the gym day one and know how to do this stuff. Very, very early on, like obviously first stage was like, my technique is terrible. My conditioning is terrible. And then I refined in my technique a little bit. And then my pace has kind of reflected that. But then when I finally was like, okay, I need to get better, not just at conditioning, but better on this implement itself. I went every other day and I would just take 5,000 meters and break it up different ways. Mm. And that early on, you can throw anything against the wall and you're going to find benefit from it. Everything is so new. Even if it's just a new experience, I'm going to take something away from it. And like my conditioning still wasn't fantastic. So I could do the same workout every other day and I'm still going to get benefit from it. But I would literally just take 5,000 meters, break it up different ways. Some days I would just do 5,000 meters straight. Other days I would, all right, I'm doing a 2,500 meter, then some short interval speed work after it. I took it to the extreme one. I only did it one time, but I just did 40 by 100, just all out sprint for 40 by 100. And
how much rest did you take?
Like 30 seconds, and then anything and everything in between.
Got it.
And then, so that, that was super early on. I'm getting benefit from doing anything really. And given more time, more experience, talking to more people, talking to professionals, obviously start refining it in, following proper programs, having intention, doing progressions throughout the season. So it's not just slamming my head against the wall every single day through the whole season, starting with longer, slower intervals, building a good base, and then tapering it down to more sprint style workouts right before competition. So it obviously got refined throughout the years, but like that first year I did 5,000 meters every other day and saw those results, thought, oh, this is great. Did it again the next year. And then didn't have the results. I went, oh, okay, there's diminishing returns on this. I can't just keep doing rowing intervals, the same thing over and over and get the same result. So I had to, find different progressions or put my effort elsewhere. Rowing was one of these staples in my training. I know I rowed probably a lot more frequently than most.
So was that your strategy to deal with all those weaknesses? I mean, to break down all the movements into small pieces and mm-hmm. master them step by step?
Yeah, that was, for me, it was pretty early on, breaking apart a movement into like these little individual pieces and then working on those individual pieces. And it started out, obviously hammering weaknesses. I want to get better at rowing, so I rowed. But then I remember the next phase after that was something as simple as I wanted to get better at pull-ups. And, I was decent at pull-ups when I was fresh. But then as soon as I did them in a Metcon and I was fatigued, I was breathing heavy, my heart rate's high, I would literally go from like being able to do 50 when I was fresh to doing like 5 when I'm under fatigue. And so I was like, all right, well, how do I get better at this? All right, well, let's practice what I'm bad at. And so I would hit a rowing interval and like all out sprint. The only point of doing the rowing interval was to get fatigued. So there's no pace in the row. There's no sandbag in the row to set myself up for easy pull-ups. But then hammer like a 500 meter row and then try to do a set of 25 pull-ups. Rest, recover, bring my heart rate down, do it again. And that was the first workout I remember of breaking it down a little bit more, and then even taking it to the extent of like, you know, my pulling endurance, getting my chin over the bar, getting my chest to the bar is my weak point. But I can't put in enough volume of pulling without tearing my hands and having it affect my training in the future. So how do I fix this? And it was like, all right, well, I'm going to find a PVC pipe, like a plastic pipe that's about the same diameter as a pull-up bar. I'm going to put a slice in it and put the plastic PVC over the bar. And then I'm going to use straps to hold myself onto the bar so that I have no hand friction. I'm not. And so then I can put in like triple the volume of pulling to get good lat endurance or good pulling endurance on these pull-ups. And, you know, so it was stuff like that. I was breaking down the movement of like, all right, well, why am I bad at pull-ups? Is it my grip endurance or is it my pulling endurance?
Yeah.
And realizing, all right, it's my pulling endurance. So how do I take my grip completely out of this so I can focus on the one specific weakness? And then I just started doing that with more and more movements. And it was really nice too, because I was able to very easily identify the bottleneck in my performance and then break it apart and work on that one thing individually.
So you always try to pinpoint the single point of failure for that movement. And once you find it, you spend lots of volume fixing that issue, correct?
Yeah. And then looking at these movements and training them the way that I grew up training. So I grew up doing Olympic weightlifting. And, you know, like say your goal is to clean and jerk 400 pounds or 182 kilos. Like it's a big milestone for a lot of people, or especially Americans, to hit that 400 pound mark. And what it's very easy in that situation to look at, all right, I want to clean and jerk 400 pounds. So every day I'm going to walk into the gym, and I'm going to load up 400 pounds and try to clean and jerk it.
Mm.
Well, if you see someone doing that, it's very easy to look at them and go, you're an idiot. That's not going to work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But then for some reason, there's a disconnect when people are training legless rope climbs or training ring muscle ups, and they go, I want to get better at ring muscle ups. And so they're going into the gym and going to failure every single day. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, you wouldn't do that with barbell work. Like, if you're trying to hit a 4-minute mile, you don't just go to the track and try to hit a 4-minute mile every day. No, it's very easy to see that that's not going to work. So why are we training other things the same way? And so something as super as simple as, I remember training with other people and them watching me do strict banded pull-ups, like having a band from the bar down to my foot and me hammering out sets of 40. And they're like, you're joking, right? And I'm like, no, why would I be joking? Like I can do 200 pull-ups like this. It's going to burn like hell, but I'm going to get a lot more volume and endurance work than you are. I'm able to focus on my technique. I'm able to focus on the movement that I'm trying to work on. And I looked at that as the same way as if I'm trying to clean and jerk 400 pounds, me doing these banded pull-ups is equivalent to me doing technique work with 135 pounds. And then go to a lighter band, and those are my reps at 225. Go to no band, that's my reps at 315. You know, like adding in these progressions along the way so I can build up some endurance and more volume at the lighter weight and good technique, so that that's what happens naturally when I go for that max effort lift.
That's basics first, right? Which yeah, is our credo as well, to build up a solid basement before adding the complex movements, more weight or some fancy stuff.
Yeah, we're not walking to the gym with this base and then trying to build a cone directly out of that. We're trying to build out that base, have more fundamental movements, and then taper off the top of that. And at the end of every season, I'm going back and building out my base wider and wider and wider. So I mean, I remember when people would come to train with me, like I would legit have, if I were traveling for a sponsor and they also sponsor one of my competitors, something like that. And so we're training together while we're on the road, and like literally getting the comments of people being like, yo, you're fucking with me, right? Like you don't want me to see what you actually do in training. And I'm like, nope, this is what I actually do. And I don't care who sees it, because very rarely is anyone else willing to put in this work as well.
But I think it's awesome that you're sharing this, because honestly, in all the documentaries and everything we saw about you, it's not getting across most of the time.
I mean, it's not fun. It's not sexy. It's not.
Yeah, like, I mean, even if people talking about you to me or to Zilvan or whoever, they always mention stuff that has nothing to do with building the base as you prescribe it right now. So it's good that you demystify that whole thing.
Like I have a good amount of friends that are the best in the world at their craft. Like it has nothing to do with sports, CrossFit, anything, but. Mm. Like I have friends that are the best in the world at what they do. And you see their Instagram posts and you're like, holy shit, it's beautiful. It's crazy. That's awesome. But then once you get talking to them, our stories are fucking parallel, identical. And they say like, yeah, you know, you put that fancy stuff on Instagram because that's what people want to see. That's the flash. That's the excitement. But that's not what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. And it was the same thing for me. Like nobody wants to see me doing rowing intervals. Nobody wants to see the mobility work that I'm putting in. Nobody wants to see me snatching 50 kilos 100 times, working on my technique. Nobody wants to see that. It's not the sexy stuff. People respond to the one rep maxes, the PRs, all this stuff. And like one, I'm not posting my PRs. No fucking way am I going to tell my competitors what I just got better at. No way. But then two, I'm not doing that stuff in training that frequently. Like maybe twice a year I'm going for a PR in the gym.
Yeah, but you were already really strong when you came into the sport.
Yeah, but then on top of like, if you look at like the stuff on the outside, like that's not barbell related, you know, going for, you know, the big sets of muscle ups. Like how many times have you seen someone posting a PR set of like unbroken muscle ups? It's flashy. It's sexy. It's this cool thing. And then I'm over here, I don't know, doing some basic work and trying to build a bigger base. But yeah, it's definitely not as many likes on Instagram.
Yeah. But we definitely like that, that you're talking about that. So, Did you care about your like metric numbers on pull-ups and muscle-ups, all that? Because you're talking about like people posting their max muscle-up. Was that ever a consideration, or was it always about just bringing it under fatigue?
So yes and no. Obviously I care about it a little bit because it's how we get graded when we show up to a competition. But I also had to remind myself that there's a lot of top level competitors that have very skewed perceptions of their own physical abilities because they're testing themselves in the ideal scenarios. So they're coming in and checking, going for a PR set of chest to bars the day after a rest day. That's their only focus for the day. You know, they're not doing anything right before it. They're only going for that thing. And then they post about it. For me, I'm like, well, what do I give a shit how many chest bars I can do fresh? Let me pull 40 cals on the rower for time and then jump up, because that's more likely how we're going to be tested. So, you know, very rarely am I chasing, like having a day revolve around chasing a PR in the gym. Very rarely am I testing something when I'm fresh. Very rarely am I even going for PRs. You know, it's always, I'm trying to emulate what I'm going to see in competition. And very rarely are we going to be tested for a one rep max PR in competition when we're fresh. You know, like look at, you know, all the times we've gone for like, what year was it? 2019. And we're doing a one rep max clean. It's on day 3 or 4 of the competition. And so you have these guys that have this false sense of security of like, oh, okay, I can clean 370. I know that's my PR. That's what I'm going for. It's like, I don't care what your PR is. What can you pull today after three full days of competition? And then what we just did this morning, there's a drastic difference. So I know what all my PRs are, but it's more along the lines of like, what can I hit on a regular day basis? Not like, all right, I took the day off yesterday. I structured everything in my day to be just singular focused on this one movement. So I had a very realistic outlook on what my performance looked like because I trained at like I was going to compete, and I never really tried to set myself up for success to have this like smack out of the park performance on this one movement.
But did that change throughout the year? I mean, you had like an amazing competition. You probably took some time off after a competition, right? And then you have some time before it gets closer to competition training. So like you could say a kind of an off season. Did they change throughout the off season that you separated things more?
Yeah. So when I was far away from competition, I did a ton of single modality training. My Metcons, like the typical CrossFit couplets, triplets, chippers, those were incredibly few and far between.
Few.
I really worked on the single modality stuff, breaking down skill work into the most minute detail, working on those. And then once I got closer to competition, that's when I would start integrating back in more complex movements or mixing movements together. And I used Metcons more as like a learning experience of, you know, how do my chest bars react after I just did a bunch of snatches? But prior to that, it's like I'm training snatches alone, I'm training chest to bar alone, and then right before the competition, merging a bunch of stuff together.
And how many competitions did you take per year?
So early on in my career, as many as possible. If there was a competition, I'm trying to hit it. And I remember one early on in my season. I was going for six competitions in 6 weeks, and I was thrashed. I was a pulp of myself. I was still in college full time, and I remember I would have to ask my professors like, "Hey, I'm going to miss Friday of class. Is it okay if I submit my homework online?" All that stuff. So I would leave Thursday night, compete like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or just Saturday, Sunday. And then I would catch a red eye back home, and I would get picked up at the airport Monday morning. And I would tell whoever was picking me up what books to bring from my house. And then they would just drop me off on campus and I would go to class.
Crazy, man.
And I did that. I was signed up for six different events in 6 weekends, and then I ended up withdrawing out of the last one. So I did five competitions over 5 weekends just because I got so sick at that last one, that by like sick. And I finally asked my manager, I'm like, "Hey, can you call that last competition and like just withdraw me? Tell him I'm sick." And he was like, "Oh, thank God." He's like, "I already withdrew you from it. Like, I wasn't going to let you, but I'm glad you came to that conclusion on your own." But at the time, like I was unknown, you know, didn't have a social media following, didn't have a resume to fall back on for sponsors. I didn't have any sponsors. So if I wanted to make any money, I had to compete and live off the prize money. But later on in my career, you know, I intentionally structured a lot of my contracts. So I got, there was an incentive for performing well at the games and the games only. There was no benefit really to competing at these other competitions other than just personal experience. So
yeah,
I think I went a handful of seasons where I only did open regionals games. And then I just like went back to my cave after that.
And just trained.
Just trained, didn't show people what I was doing, just kind of put the blinders on and have that sole focus of the games.
Yeah, that's also, I mean, it's also good if you don't show up to a competition, people do not know where you are at, right?
Yeah.
And once you have a lot of experience, which you obviously got in the first years where you trained, like where you took a lot of competitions, then you probably don't need as much anymore. So
yeah, like I would sign up for competition, you know, like if Rogue had the Rogue Invitational, obviously like I'm a Rogue athlete, so they would send me an invite. They want me there. It's good for them. And, you know, I know I have trust in them that they're going to put on a good event, a safe event, not like crush all of us. So a competition like that would come up and I would go, okay, this is a win-win situation for me. There's only two results when you sign up for competition. Either you're going to win or you're going to lose. And I was like, all right, if I go there and I win, then it's confirming, it's giving me confidence in the training I've been doing, and I can continue on the same path. If I lose, there's a couple benefits. One, I now know what I need to train better. I know what I need to do better when I'm by myself training. But then also, everyone else is going to think that I'm falling off. Everyone else is going to think like, oh, Matt's lost it. We have a shot. And so I looked at it like that. I'm like, if I go to this competition, it's a win-win for me. Either I win and it confirms everything I'm doing, or I lose and it gives me a new training strategy leading into the game, so I'm more well-rounded. So yeah, at the end of my career, I tried to hit some competitions here and there, like, you know, one a season leading into the games, just as a confirmation, a little test run before going to the big competition.
Would you describe yourself as having a big ego?
Oh God, no. No, I'm sure like anyone, like we all have character defects, and I analyze myself and I'm brutally, brutally honest. So, you know, if something happens and it upsets me, I will step back and think like, all right, why did this upset me? Mm-hmm. Did that person actually do something wrong, or did their actions bruise my pride? Did it bruise my ego? And now I'm feeling insecure about it, you know, like stuff like that. I try to be very aware of keeping ego out of it. There's been a couple times through my career where like I have to reach out for help to get better at a certain movement or something. And so like sprinting, I went and trained with a middle school track team for a whole season. And so for my sprinting practice, I'm literally going from like, I'm one of the highest ranked CrossFit athletes in the world, and I'm over here getting my ass kicked by this eighth grader in sprinting. And it was just on a daily basis of having to put your pride, put your ego aside and go like, all right, I suck at this. This is how I get better. So I'm sure there's times in my life where my ego kind of rises up and I try to keep it in check. But for the most part, I try to be very self-conscious, very, very self-aware of it, and make sure that it does not influence my actions or my decisions.
And whether some mental lows as well in the time where you're just dominating the whole field and winning 5 gold medals?
Holy fuck, like you wouldn't believe. Dude, the insecurities, like the more you learn about yourself, the more you know about yourself, like you don't just know the things you're good at. You also know the things you're terrible at. And so it's one of those things, like the more you know, the more informed you become on a subject, the more you realize, the more you know that you don't know. Sorry, I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah, I mean, I had insecurities all the time, you know, and I try to use them to my benefit of like, all right, what am I insecure about right now? Like, oh man, what if sprinting comes up at the games? I'm terrible at sprinting. All right, well, that's usually a good indicator of what you should work on. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, you're scared that it's going to show up. Rarely are you nervous that something's going to come up that you're phenomenal at. Rarely do you hate a movement that you're great at. It's usually a positive association of like, oh, I'm good at thrusters, so I love thrusters. And so I use that as a gauge of how I should be training. Of like, I would see a workout and be like, oof, I'm nervous to hit that one. It's probably because I'm not good at it. So I'd use that as a gauge of what I did in training. But I mean, yeah, then just insecurities. Like there's nothing comforting about going out in front of 10,000 people and potentially losing. There's nothing comforting about like think about the job of an analyst in the sport. Their job is to pick you apart and tell the public what you're doing wrong. There's nothing comforting about that. I don't think people, it's such a norm that that's what sportscasters do, that I don't think people are able to put themselves in the shoes of the athlete, of like, how would you feel if somebody just observed you for 3 days out of the year and picked and publicly announced all your character defects, whether they're correct or not? They're seeing you for 3 days out of the year, and it's the type of thing like you're running and you trip, and now the narrative for the next year is, oh man, he has bad balance, we saw him trip. And it's like, dude, I tripped one time, let it go, you know? Like, yeah, there's nerves about all of it, of what if I'm not good enough? What if they expose my weaknesses? What if everyone else figured out the secret and now they're all better? What if I get publicly humiliated in front of 10,000 people? What if I just this, what if, like, but like, what if I dedicate a whole year of my life to perfecting this craft and I don't do it and I don't live up to it? What if I waste my potential? What if I have a momentary lapse in judgment and ease off the throttle because I made a bad decision and wanted some instant gratification of like having this workout hurt a little bit less? You know, that was my biggest fear, was having that lapse in judgment and easing off the throttle, because I had done it before. You know, it was a learned experience. But yeah, I mean, even when I'm doing well in a competition, it's like the nerves are there. What Sammy had to deal with weeks before the competition, I was just an emotional wreck, you know, just nervous. And she would just kind of prop me up and tell me I was strong, tell me I was capable, and tell me she loved me no matter what. And I'll be like, okay, let's go.
Yeah, that's worth gold. Is it at any point during your career, did you have doubts about the career path? Like, not just like a little hole, but like about the whole career path that you had ahead of you?
Like as if like I had chosen the wrong thing?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Like you wanted to get out or something?
No, I never had anything like that. You know, like I got into CrossFit because I had that feeling. I had a job at an aerospace company. They specialized in ground-to-air defense missiles. And so I got that job and I was super excited because I was like, this is sick. I get to be a rocket scientist. Mm-hmm. And then sitting in a cubicle with a gray floor, gray cubicle walls, gray ceiling, I just remember thinking like, holy fuck, this is not the rest of my life. Like, I'm too young to step into this. Like, this job, this opportunity will be here when I'm 40 years old. I need to go try to make something of myself. And so I went from that into CrossFit because I was scared in that moment. I was like, I think I chose the wrong career path. And so then going into CrossFit, and I was like, okay, this is a situation where I get to dictate what my result is. I get to dictate what my potential is. I get to dictate the hours I work, how much effort I put in, how much emotion I put in, how far I want to take this thing. I was the one in control of that. And so I was like, the desk job will always be here. I can come back to it whenever I want. So I'm going to push the chips all in on this competing thing, and fingers crossed it works out.
Well, and it did work out. And now, after finishing your active career, you've chosen to become like multiple things, right? You have become a coach, pretty much. I mean, you go from podcast to podcast, but also you've written a book, and this is actually the reason why we have this podcast with you today. So what was your intention bringing out this book for CrossFit people?
You know, honestly, it's not just for CrossFit. I think the immediate, the most benefit will be for CrossFitters, obviously, because that's the direct subject matter that's being talked about. Is through my competitive career, how I approach nutrition, training, competing, family life, balancing all these things. But I think it's not unrealistic to expect somebody that has no interest in competing in CrossFit or even does CrossFit and take some of the things that I did and then apply them to their lives or their passion or whatever they're trying to pursue. So I think I hope my goal is that somebody that doesn't even do CrossFit is able to read it and look at some of these little tiny things that I did and apply them into their day to day and start looking at their subject matter the same way, like the same way that I looked at a movement. I'm like, all right, ring muscle ups. If you break a ring muscle up, there's say 10 different pieces to it. Which one is the bottleneck? And so if you're trying to progress with your own business or your own work life, take step back from the situation and look, where's the bottleneck? What's the one thing that's the hold up here? And how can I improve on that piece of skill work so that it makes my day easier, makes my day better? I see a better result at the end of the work week. So I think that's my goal, is that someone can take the situations that I've experienced and apply them to their day-to-day lives and see the results.
Yeah, you really break it down in that book to the absolute basics and then make it applicable pretty much, right? Give a straight line that people can walk from A to B. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we just had the chance to read it from yesterday and today. And I got to say, if I got that book in 2014, it would have been the best gift ever. No joke.
That's great to hear. Yeah, I'm sure I would have enjoyed having it in 2014 as well.
So Matt, one more thing, because you also are coaching together with a hybrid performance, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we've been wondering, why did you choose hybrid?
So yeah, you know, just using their platform, they had been approaching me for a while, and you know, I'm good friends with the owners, and you know, I've gotten familiar. You know, I always used their gym to train when I was down in Miami, and they kept coming to me of like, hey, like, you do the program, you do everything based with it, you dictate everything, and then we will just host it. And so, you know, they've been incredibly successful with other programs, other avenues. And you know, it was just like, I got along with them on a personal level. And so for me, that's a big deciding factor on who I do work with, is I want to make sure that the personal relationship links up well, and then make sure that the business side links up as well. So, you know, just got along with them really well. And they were handling everything on the back end. So, you know, I was very hesitant with wanting to release programming. It was something that I didn't know, if I wanted to pursue it. So anyways, we signed a 1-year agreement that they would host my program for 1 year. And I decided, like, all right, if I hate it and I don't enjoy it, I can grit through it for 1 year. Not a big deal. But then if I love it, it's 1 year, and then we can move forward from there. So yeah, I had signed a 1-year agreement with Hybrid that they would host it, and so yeah, it just kind of worked out well, and it was a low barrier of entry for me. Of, you know, there wasn't much risk on my end. You know, if the program didn't take off, then, you know, I wasn't heavily invested. It was just my time invested.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, it ended up taking off way, way better than I in my wildest dreams. So, you know, there's some reevaluating there of like, oh shit, all right, this took off really well. And the fact that I ended up enjoying it much, much more than I was anticipating. So I was like, okay, now it's time to go all in on this. I'll start investing more time, more equity from my part, to give a better resource to the athletes.
And when you began CrossFit training, you started out with a generic programming, like a template programming that was not specific for you. Mm-hmm. So you have a reference point. What would you say makes the hard work pays off programming stand out?
You know, the thing that I really like, and I hope people see the benefit from, is, you know, just the progressions, learning that more is not always better. You know, it's not all about volume, volume, volume. Let's hit less volume, but with a very specific goal for every piece. And so this was another big piece with launching the program. You can give the same workout to two people and not give them any information of what's the intent of this workout, what's the stimulus of the workout, how should you approach it, what's the end goal of this workout. And not give them any information, and they'll get two totally different results. And so the big thing I wanted to do was provide information to the end user so that they hit my program correctly. They're not just going guns blazing right out of the gates and then boom, burn and crash, burn and crash, burn and crash. And then at the end of the month going, well, I didn't see any results. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, you hit everything incorrectly.
Yeah.
So the big investment on my end was every day of training has a 10 to 15 minute video of me, just me and the camera going through. I give a quick summation of what the day of training is and then what the intent of every piece of that training is, how to approach it, how to scale it, how to modify it. And so, I mean, we're coming up on a year into programming. And so for every day, there is a 15 minute video. So that's 365 15 minute videos of me going through the day of training, of how to approach the day of training, what the intent of everything is. So, because I knew the benefit of being educated about the training that you're doing. So not only one, are we going through proper progressions, that it's not just a, hey, today let's push press for the sake of push pressing. It's like, no, we're going to break this cycle down. We have our starting point now. Where do we want to be in 3 months' time? And then filling in everything in between. And then also providing the information to the athletes so that they know the stimulus that they should be going after. They know how to pace these things a little bit more intelligently. So I'd say that's probably the biggest thing. Was just the information that we provide. But then obviously we started with just our one program, which is coined like the flagship program now. That was the one that we launched with. And that's the one that I think the majority of people are on. But then according to some people, they're going, this is so much volume. I can't possibly get this done in time. And then there's other people that are like, this is not nearly enough volume. I want three times as much. And so it's like, all right, so we made the HWPO 60. So it's like, all right, 60 minutes in and out, everything's on a clock and you're held accountable. And then there's the HWPO Pro where it's like, hey, you need at least two sessions per day. You're going to be off site. You're going to be doing unique stuff. You're going to be required to find these resources of, you know, a little bit more elaborate equipment that isn't like your typical affiliate equipment. You know, we're listening to the athletes of what they want, what they don't want, and trying to decipher, all right, like, let's add in a little bit more value for the end user.
Man, you sold that thing. It's bought. Now, I think we got a lot of stuff out of this podcast. Zillin, awesome. I think you agree, right?
Dude, that was hour 15. Oh my God. That flew by.
Yeah, yeah. Time ran. I have so many questions on here, but I think we got the most important things out, right, Zillin? Do you have any more questions right now?
I mean, that was an amazing conversation. Just one more question. Do you have any last moment tips and tricks for the Open in 2022?
Last tips for the Open. So I actually sat down and like we did a little thing of like my tips for the Open. But I think one of the most important ones is and it's very easy to say, but really tough to execute on, is like, don't get emotional. Don't get nervous for the Open workouts. It's not productive and it solves nothing. It's burning more energy. And if you look at a workout, day of workout, getting nervous about it accomplishes nothing, because you're only capable of what you're capable of. So it's like, break down the workout objectively. What am I good at? What am I bad at? How and what can I do to get the best performance out of the tools that I have right now? And when you look at it objectively like that, you know, like I'm guilty of it as well. Like Open workout, you're set up, you're warmed up, everything. Your ref is waiting for you. Your camera is ready to go. And then you're like, oh, let me hit one more quick bike interval. Let me hit one more snatch. Let me hit one more wall ball. Like thinking that you're always chasing that perfect feeling of like, all right, now I'm ready to go. That feeling's never coming. So just say, fuck it, warm up, start the clock and go. And just know that like, you're only in control of your effort. It's not like you can only control that. So put in a full effort, give it your all, and try not to let nerves get into it. And really, really just break down the situation of, what do I have control over in this situation, and then execute on those things as cleanly as possible.
Perfect. All right, Matt, thank you a lot for your time. We really enjoyed this conversation. And yeah, we hope you have a great day today and obviously lots of success with all your ventures going forward.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Thanks a lot, Matt. See ya, man. And take care. Was für ein cooles Gespräch, oder Hendrik?
Da bin ich ganz bei dir. Ich bin selbst immer noch verblüfft. Das hat richtig Spaß gemacht. Und ich muss auch ganz ehrlich sagen, ich habe das Gefühl, Matt Fraser in diesem Interview nochmal ganz neu kennengelernt zu haben.
Also absolut. Ich dachte mir so, hey, was ist das denn für ein cooler Typ?
Genau. Ja, super humble, sehr, sehr angenehm. Und ich glaube, es ist gut, wenn wir jetzt nochmal ein Punkte, weil das Gespräch ja auf Englisch war, wenn wir nochmal ein paar Punkte zusammenfassen können für alle.
Ja, was ich super schön fand, von Matt Fraser zu hören, dass auch er Basics macht. Darüber sprechen wir ja so oft, dass das einfach wichtig ist, um dann eben größere Dinge darauf aufbauen zu können. Und das hat er ja genau so nochmal für uns erklärt.
Genau, im Zusammenhang mit Schwächen ging es nämlich auch genau um diese Basis, die als allererstes stimmen muss. Und er hat einen grundsätzlichen Ansatz für Schwächen, wie er damit umgeht. Und zwar versucht er als allererstes rauszufinden, was ist dieser eine Punkt, der mich dazu bringt, nicht gut zu sein in dieser Sache. Häufig gibt es da natürlich auch mehrere. Klar, wie er als er von seinem Rudern gesprochen hat und im Grunde genommen da gar nichts gestimmt hat. Hat am Anfang, natürlich ist er nicht der Größte, aber die Technik hat auch nicht gestimmt und die Kraftausdauer. Am Anfang hat da eben noch nichts gepasst. Und dann fängt man nacheinander an zu gucken, was ist das Wichtigste und wie kann man das eliminieren. Und das hat er sehr, sehr schön auch dann in Bezug auf seine Klimmzüge, seine Kipping-Pull-Ups erklärt. Und zwar, man findet diesen einen Punkt, bei ihm war es eben die Kraftausdauer, vor allem unter Vorbelastung bei den Kipping-Pull-Ups.
Ja.
Und sobald man weiß, was das Problem ist, dann beginnt man ganz viel, oder beginnt er zumindest ganz viel Volumen mit dieser Schwäche zu machen. Also wirklich fast jeden Tag seine Schwäche zu trainieren. Und jetzt würden die meisten sagen, bei sowas wie Pull-Ups ist das ja gar nicht möglich, aber das hat er eben sehr, sehr gut erklärt, denn er versucht eben Möglichkeiten zu finden, die Übungen so runterzubrechen, dass man sich eben nicht die Hände dabei dann aufreißt oder dass man eben nicht jeden Tag sich komplett zerstört und somit es schafft, viel, viel Qualitätsvolumen auf seine absolute Schwäche zu bringen.
Sind das Tipps und Tricks, die du in deinem Training mit übernimmst?
Auf jeden Fall. Auf jeden Fall. Ich fand das auch sehr interessant mit dem Rudern, dass er wirklich jeden Tag rudert. Er hat das ja auch nochmal so ein bisschen differenziert. Der Anfänger, der einfach, oder als er noch weiter am Anfang war, wo er diese 5000 Meter genommen hat und einfach in verschiedenen Zusammensetzungen wegtrainiert hat, also entweder 500 Meter Intervalle oder 5 Kilometer am Stück, und er konnte im Grunde genommen alles Mögliche machen, und jetzt muss er natürlich als Fortgeschrittener etwas differenzierter da vorgehen, also es funktioniert dann nicht mehr genauso.
Ja.
Er sagte ja auch diminishing returns, also das, was am Ende rauskommt, das wird immer geringer, das ist ja in jeder Sportart so oder bei jedem Ziel, das man verfolgt. Irgendwann muss man mehr Arbeit reinstecken, um was rauszubekommen. Aber was ich richtig interessant fand, war gerade das mit den Klimmzügen oder auch, wie man das auf Muscle-Ups anwenden kann. Die Ideen, wie er diese Sachen dann eben auch runterbricht. Aber was er ganz klar auch dazu sagt, ist, das hat er ganz am Ende des Podcasts erwähnt, er will trotzdem kein Junk-Volume haben. Das heißt, schwächenspezifisch, ja, die Schwächen trainieren, aber man muss insgesamt vom Training nicht komplett übertreiben mit dem, wie viel man macht. Vor allen Dingen wahrscheinlich, wenn man selber nicht Matt Fraser heißt.
Ja, ich glaube, dass das ein sehr wichtiger Ansatz ist, weil man dann ja auch oft dazu neigt, viel zu viel zu machen. Und er hat es ja bei seinem Programming auch so beschrieben, mehr ist eben nicht immer mehr. Und man sollte dann eben sehr spezifisch und sehr gezielt trainieren, um an seinen Schwächen zu arbeiten und diese auszubauen.
Und das Gleiche gilt für sein Hard Work Pays Off, also in Anführungszeichen, ich glaube, das wird ganz oft falsch verstanden, jeder denkt, Matt Fraser schießt sich jeden Tag komplett raus, aber auch das ist gar nicht der Fall. Matt Fraser macht eben ganz, ganz viel Basic Training, insbesondere empfiehlt er das auch für Anfänger, wenn es um das Liften geht, also auf keinen Fall jeden Tag versuchen, neue One-Rep-Maxes zu finden oder dergleichen, sondern viel, viel lieber, wie er ja gesagt hat, er macht lieber 50 Snatches mit 50 Kilo mit perfekter Technik, als jedes Mal super heavy zu gehen. Ja, also das kann sich viele, glaube ich, hinter die Ohren schreiben. Da kann man sich definitiv was mitnehmen.
Auch der Vergleich, wo er dann meinte, hey, wenn ich jetzt laufen gehe, dann mache ich das auch nicht mit einer Scheißtechnik, wo ich mich vielleicht sogar verletzen kann. Aber wenn es dann um komplexe Weightlifting-Bewegungen, um komplexe turnerische Elemente geht, da probiere ich dann plötzlich, mich auf Krampf irgendwie hochzuzwingen, so, boah, Hauptsache oben. So, und davon rät er ja genau ab. Also, dass er sagt, hey, mach's doch wie beim Laufen oder wie beim Rudern, erstmal schön locker auf Technik und dann nach und nach komplexer werden. Und diesen Ansatz verfolgt er ja auch bei allen anderen Elementen dann im CrossFit.
Richtig, und wie er dann auch sagt, erst dann bringt man es unter Intensitätsbedingungen, dann aber richtig, also wenn es bei ihm Richtung Wettkampf geht, dann schmeißt er auch gerne mal einen 500 Meter All-Out-Row vor seinen CrossFit-Workout oder vor seine große Schwäche, die er hat, vielleicht Pull-Ups oder Muscle-Ups, was auch immer, um sich schon richtig krass vorzuermüden. Aber das passiert erst, nachdem man die Qualität mit gutem Volumen Qualitätstraining aufgebaut hat. Und was du eben auch schon gesagt hast mit den Schwächen, das hat er auch richtig gut zusammengefasst, und zwar muss man sein Ego abgeben, um zu so einem richtig hohen Level zu kommen. Er ist mit 8-Klässlern zusammen auf den Laufplatz gegangen, um mit dem Laufcoach zusammen zu trainieren, und wurde regelmäßig von 8-Klässlern abgezogen beim Sprinten, weil er es halt nicht gut konnte. Und da musste er durch, aber das hat er auch gerne in Kauf genommen, um dann anschließend bei den CrossFit Games, ich glaube, das war sogar schon ein Jahr später, dann auf einmal Zweiter geworden ist beim Sprinten. Ja, also so schnell geht's, wenn man sein Ego aus der Sache rauszieht und sich mal eingesteht, dass man einfach bestimmte Sachen nicht gut kann.
Ich finde es so hilfreich für jeden von uns, sich da mal selber an die Nase zu fassen und zu verstehen, so, hey, es gibt hier noch was zu lernen, da draußen ist jemand, der ist besser als ich, der kann mir aber zeigen, wie das geht. Und da muss ich auch als mehrfacher World Champion offen und bescheiden genug sein, mir das einzugestehen, um dann auch eben dazulernen zu können.
Dass man selbst, wenn man in einer sehr fortgeschrittenen Position vielleicht schon ist, normalerweise ist man immer der absolute Champ, egal was man macht. Ich meine, Matt Fraser, Bester der Welt im CrossFit, und trotzdem gibt er sich die Blöße, dann auf einmal nochmal schlecht zu sein irgendwo.
Ja, aber das macht ihn auch so gut, oder?
Das macht ihn auch so gut, und ich meine, er hatte einen ganz klaren Anreiz. Du hast eine richtig tolle Frage gestellt, und zwar hast du ihn gefragt, ob er auch zwischendurch immer wieder Löcher hatte und Ängste auch während seiner Karriere, und er antwortet mit Holy fuck, of course, oder irgendwie sowas, ja. Also auch Matt Fraser hatte Ängste, und genau die haben ihn aber dazu getrieben, nicht das Ganze zu vermeiden, weil das ist ja eine Reaktion, die man darauf haben könnte, dann nicht zum Wettkampf zu gehen oder das nicht zu präsentieren, sich immer rumzudrücken. Er hat genau die gegenteilige Strategie gehabt. Er hat diese Ängste genutzt, um unermüdlich an seinen Schwächen zu arbeiten, um eben seinem Ego den gar auszumachen, weil die Angst dann tatsächlich im Wettkampf auseinandergenommen zu werden von den Announcern, die ihn wegen seiner schlechten Technik oder was auch immer runterreden, die war viel größer als die Angst davor, sich zum Affen zu machen in der Gruppe mit den Achtklässlern, zum Beispiel beim Sprinten. Ja. Oder bei allen anderen Sachen, wenn er sagt, dass er sich mit Experten trifft, die ihm dann eben zeigen, wie es funktioniert, wo er dann natürlich immer wieder fast in diesen Anfängerstatus zurückfällt.
Definitiv, ja. Um dieses tolle Gespräch zum Abschluss zu bringen, Hendrik, eine letzte Frage an dich. Was ist Hard Work Pays Off? Worum geht's da?
Um ehrlich zu sein, war mir das vor diesem Gespräch auch selbst noch nicht so ganz klar. Oder zumindest nicht. Ich habe gedacht, das bedeutet etwas ganz anderes. Es ist aus diesem Podcast oder aus diesem Gespräch mit Matt ganz klar hervorgegangen, dass Hard Work Pays Off bedeutet, alle Punkte zu eliminieren, die im Nachhinein eine Ausrede zulassen würden. Also, wenn wir es auf seine Eis-Story beziehen, er hat immer Ben & Jerry's gegessen und das hat ihm richtig Spaß gemacht, besser zu sein als alle anderen, obwohl er Eiscreme essen konnte und die anderen sich immer perfekt ernährt hatten. Aber im Nachhinein, wenn man dann mal eine Niederlage erlebt, fragt man sich immer, aber was wäre, wenn ich das nicht gemacht hätte? Es bleibt also immer eine Ausrede offen, weil man ja sagen kann, ja, hätte ich das nicht gemacht oder hätte ich das anders gemacht, dann hätte ich es schaffen können. Das kann man sowohl positiv als auch negativ jetzt auslegen. Aber diese mögliche Ausrede zu eliminieren, dass es sowas nicht gibt, auf keiner Ebene, das ist Hard Work Pays Off. Die Arbeit daran, keine Ausrede mehr im Nachhinein zuzulassen. Und das zahlt sich aus, und da haben wir mit Matt Fraser das beste Beispiel. Der hat anschließend, nachdem er zu dieser Auffassung gekommen ist, 5-mal alles abgeräumt, was ging im CrossFit, und jetzt mit Bravour den Übertrag aus der Karriere heraus ins, ja, anderweitige Arbeitsleben geschafft, sage ich mal.
Ja, die bekanntliche Karriere nach der Karriere. Das hätte man so nicht besser zusammenfassen können. Ich bin super froh und glücklich, dass das Gespräch heute so stattfinden konnte. Und wir haben noch was Cooles für euch vorbereitet. Wir dürfen nämlich dreimal eine Ausgabe von Matts neuem Buch Hard Work Pays Off verlosen. Und dafür wechselt ihr am besten mal direkt zu unserem Instagram-Account. Denn wenn ihr diese Folge jetzt hört, dann ist da bereits ein Post online, unter dem ihr an diesem Gewinnspiel teilnehmen könnt. Dafür bitte einmal das Bild liken, Training ohne Limit und dem Finanzbuchverlag bei Instagram folgen und mindestens einen Freund oder eine Freundin verlinken, die auf jeden Fall diese Folge hören müssen und natürlich auch im Gewinnspiel teilnehmen dürfen. Das nämlich bis zum Freitag online ist, also 23.59 Uhr ist Schluss und dann werden wir am Samstag die Gewinner und die Gewinnerinnen zusammen auslosen und dann natürlich auch über die Story bekannt geben. Also drücken wir euch die Daumen und dann dürft ihr euch vielleicht bald über eine neue Ausgabe von Hard Work Pays Off freuen.
Und das ist wirklich ein cooles Buch, also wir durften schon reinschauen, das war vorhin im Podcast. Keine Übertreibung, jeder, der vor allen Dingen am Anfang steht im CrossFit, der sollte dieses Buch lesen. Und im Hinblick auf die CrossFit Open, die diese Woche starten, wünschen wir euch jetzt richtig viel Erfolg und natürlich auch viel Erfolg beim Gewinnspiel. Macht's gut, Leute, und bis bald.
Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören, bleibt gesund und bis dahin. Leute, wenn euch diese Folge gefallen hat, dann erzählt euren Freunden davon, verlinkt uns in eurer Instagram-Story und schreibt uns euer Feedback dazu.
Abonniert uns auf den Social-Media-Kanälen, hört uns bei Spotify oder Apple Podcast und jetzt wünschen wir euch noch eine schöne Woche. Wir sehen uns beim nächsten Mal.
Macht's gut, bis dahin.